Hi, this is Julie.
This is Liz.
This is Sheila.
This is Monica.
This is Leanne.
We are the Satellite Sisters.
You are listening to Satellite Sisters to Go.
You are listening to Satellite Sisters. Great to be with you today. It is Tuesday, June 9th. I'm Leanne Dolan in Pasadena, California. It's the Tuesday show, so that means I'm joined by my sister, Julie, because we love talking on Tuesdays, don't we, Jewel?
Right. That's about it, Leanne. We got selected for this assignment, but I'm happy we did, Leanne, because I enjoy talking to you on Tuesdays.
I do. I enjoy catching up without the others interfering, really.
Yes. Yeah.
We have a lot to talk about. As someone pointed out last week on the Facebook page, that it's too bad we're not opinionated enough. So, Julie, I think you called it today. What did you say today's show is going to be?
It's going to be a very fine show, Leanne. That's what we have today.
We have some actual topics that we're going to talk about. You know, we have been doing the weekly recap of Outlander, and that's over now. So we have a gap to fill. And we've rushed in and we filled it with some Tuesday stuff. So actually, we're going to talk about an op-ed piece in the New York Times that is gathering a lot of critics and fans alike about student loans. Julie, you have something that all high school juniors should be doing from the dean at Stanford. You have a list of activities for them.
This is it. This is the secret, Leanne, the secret from the freshman dean at Stanford University, what your juniors should be doing this summer. Okay, so you might want to get out a pen and paper to take notes.
Okay, because I assume it's not sitting on the couch watching The Simpsons, which is what my junior's actually currently doing. So there you go. We have a follow-up to last week's comments on community service. I spoke out against community service, the concept of mandatory community service. I just said for us, for a long time, it just seems very forced. We'll go into it, but we got a very lively discussion on the Facebook page. Lots of very thoughtful comments, different points of view, parents in different schools and different places with different age kids commenting on, you know, what is obviously a trend, mandatory community service, no matter what kind of school your kid is at. We do have Tuesday trends. It's fashion related, which is exciting when we cover fashion. We're going to talk.
It excites us at least, right, Leanne?
Because we're ill-qualified. And then we have some movie and TV tips I want. Julie, recommendations for you. I feel bad after the Outlander finale. I feel so bad.
Me too, Leanne. Me too. But we'll talk about that.
But, okay. You know, you really got me back because you told that horrible story about the house infested with snakes. And guess what I had a dream about last night, Julie?
Oh, no, Leanne.
Yeah, it has terrified me. The image of those snakes in the wall. Thanks so much. So I feel like there's been payback already. And then there is a beauty trend I would like to put out to the Satellite Sisterhood. I want some information on it. I'm sure some of you have already tried it. So, and then, and that's it. Oh, and then we have a special message on heart health from Go Red for Women. So, all right, Jewel, this op-ed piece appeared in the New York Times this week, getting a lot of press, isn't it?
Right. This is Elise Siegel, who is a writer, and he wrote in the New York Times about his personal experience, where he was from a lower middle class family. His parents were divorced, but he decided to go to a small private liberal arts college, expensive private school. And he and his mother co-signed some loans. Fast forward, you know, he chose, you know, he loved, you know, being at the private school, but later his parents developed more financial troubles and he had to switch schools. Anyway, he did complete his degree, but ended up with a lot of student loans, but he was convinced that he wanted a life as a writer. And he, as he wrote in this piece in the Sunday New York Times magazine, that he just got to a point where he had to make a decision to either choose another occupation that would pay more so he could pay off his loan, or he could choose the life that he really intended for himself, to be a writer and to default on his loan. And that's exactly what he did. He decided to default on his student loans. And it raises the question, I think that all millennials are dealing with, Gen Xers are dealing with, and even baby boomers are dealing with, Leanne, which is the crushing burden of student loans that, you know, for many kids as they're going to colleges now, they're in school, they're borrowing money. And they're getting out of school, and now the job market, you know, the pay is not there, and it really is shaping how they live their adult lives, because they have to pay back these giant student loans, mm-hmm. where they're, you know, some kids are leaving school with $100,000 in undergraduate student loans.
That's nuts.
I mean, it's an amazing thing, because it then, you know, it certainly shapes what kind of job you seek. And then, it, whether or not you can afford a house, you probably, you know, can't with that kind of loan burden. Do you delay having a family? Do you delay getting married because of these student loans? So this piece was, you know, he went on to say that, you know, he has advice for other people, because he really thinks that it is criminal, the whole system of student loans, and how the government, the universities, the banks have all, financial institutions are all involved in this, you know, really burdening a whole generation with just really unnecessary debt. But he does at the same time say that if you're, you know, planning on defaulting on your student loans, that, you know, he had some suggestions, which were kind of
Sheila-like. His suggestions, honestly, were like what Sheila would do.
Yes, I think maybe Sheila's financial planner. He said you should take out a lot of credit cards before you default on your loan, because your credit rating is obviously going to be impacted by your default. So, you know, it's good to get your line of credit early. And then, you should sort of square away your rental situation, because, again, it's going to be difficult to find another place to live, because most, you know, rent, when you go to rent an apartment, they do some credit check. And if you've defaulted on your student loans, that may impact your ability to get the apartment. And then third, he suggested that you find a partner with good credit. Yeah. So that, you know, you can go ahead and default on your loans as long as you've lined up a partner for life who has better credit. So then I guess everything goes in his or her name.
And not to besmirch our sister Sheila, who has none of this. She has paid off all her student loans.
Yes, she has.
I'm just saying, occasionally she has some magical thinking when it comes to finance. And this guy's advice, I was stunned by it, Julie. I mean, there was a lot of issues to talk about, because on the one hand, yes, entire generations burdened with this tremendous student debt. It's almost like $30,000. That's the average debt that people are coming out of college with, you know, but in some cases it is up to $100,000, $120,000 if you've gone to a private college. And, you know, and that doesn't include graduate school, obviously. So what was your take? Because you've been in academia,
you put two kids
through college, you know, you kind of pay attention to these sorts of things. And we've had a lot of private conversations where you've said to me, it doesn't matter where your kids go to school. Just, it's not worth the debt. Like, you could get a good education anywhere. So what was your thought about this?
Well, that was the main thing that I was thinking as I read this, that, you know, that it was unnecessary to, you know, to take on that kind of debt. But at the same time, I think if you do take on the debt, you really need to pay it off. Okay.
Yeah.
That I think the idea that somehow defaulting on your student loan because he chose life, as if that was something dramatic and honorable and wonderful to do. No, you walked away from a big debt is what you did.
Right.
And that's not fair. But I mean, as you said, I have worked as an administrator at a number of schools, you know, private schools and public schools, but where, you know, I see students coming in, taking out, working out their financial aid packages, taking on loans. And I've come around with that, Leanne. I'm not in favor necessarily of burdening your future by just getting some big name degree. I really am not. I think that you can be just as successful in graduate school and in your professional career, you know, by going to some more affordable schools, and that you are burdening, you know, you are really putting yourself behind the eight ball to have, you know, to have a big debt that you have to worry about to pay off. You know, it's just, I applaud the writer for, you know, for being honest, even though he is a little crazy in his point of view. But I, you know, I applaud him that he, you know, he's writing about that, because I think he's raising a very important discussion. You know, I mean, schools, you know, they really, we've been running this system and it is about to blow up. It's interesting. There's a piece today in the news where the Obama administration is going to forgive student loans at a for all former students if they can prove that they were lured into this. It's one of those proprietary schools, a for-profit school called Corinthian College, where essentially they were propping up their employment numbers that you know. So if you wanted to look to see where graduates got jobs at Corinthian College, what Corinthian College was doing was paying temp agencies to hire their graduates for short periods of time, so that, you know, Corinthian College could say 100% of our graduates got jobs, you know, blah blah blah, and then the students were let go. So this is you know, the Obama administration wants to forgive $3.5 billion worth of student loans for this one particular situation. So, you know, I think there are a lot of other people that want to walk away from their student loans. I think there are people, you know, that are, you know, that it just is not a sustainable system that we have. You know, it's just, I think we, you know, we're at that breaking point. And maybe this article will get more people talking seriously about how to restructure some of this. I think that's why you're seeing like online universities coming into play, and you're seeing, you know, really a shift, a move towards more affordable undergraduate education.
Liz and Leanne here, and we are so grateful to have Osea support Satellite Sisters. Why? Because it's just a great product. Holy cow, do we love Osea's skin and body care. And you know what? This Mother's Day, just look no further than Osea. Spoil the moms in your life with the little luxuries from Osea. The moms, the stepmoms, the bonus moms, the people who bring a touch of something special to your life, aunts, grandmothers, they would love a little Osea this Mother's Day. And you can get 10% off your first order by using our code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And Liz, you know what every mother and mother figure needs?
What?
More moisture, Liz. They need more moisture in their skin.
No kidding. I mean, really, the creams, the lotions, the oils. I love it all. That duo they have going. Oh. Like, you can't miss with the duo of Osea.
Liz, the mega moisture duo. Yes. You can literally see your skin get firmer. And it just delivers this full body glow. Okay, you know we have raved about the Undaria algae body oil. Mm-hmm. Well, pair that with the Undaria collagen body oil. Youthful, yeah. Liz, your youthful, yeah, glow is going to happen. And it's infused with Osea's signature Undaria seaweed. So it just smells so delicious, doesn't it?
I know you're talking about giving it as a gift. I also suggest just giving it to yourself because you're worth it.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Okay, that moisture duo I mentioned too is a great value because you can save 16% plus the extra 10% with our code SADSISTERS. So this is it. This is a win-win-win Mother's Day gift. Spoil the moms in your life with clean vegan skincare and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with the code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And you get free samples in every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Osea is spelled O-S-E-A. So head on over to OseaMalibu.com and use code SATSISTERS for 10% off. Thanks, Osea. Liz, you know we love talking about Framebridge, don't we?
We do. Because there are just so many fun things to frame, Leanne, aren't there?
Right. Anything. You can just upload a digital photo from your phone and they can print it and frame it. And that is a gift right there, a gift people would love getting. But Liz, you recently had quite an exciting Framebridge experience. Would you like to share?
I talked about how when we were at the Bruce Springsteen concert, I was with our brother Dick, his wife Susan, his two kids, and one of the roadies threw us the set list at the end of the show, which was amazing. To get the actual set list for the actual concert in Los Angeles. And we're like, oh, yeah, any day now, that's going to be in a place of honor in their home. Sure enough, Leanne, they have already frame bridged it and sent it to us with a picture. So I'll be in Bend next week, so I'll get to see it. But it's just excellent use of the Framebridge resources, the Bruce Springsteen set list.
Fantastic. And this is gift giving season. So if you have a graduation coming up, a wedding, a shower, Mother's Day, Father's Day, look around. I'm sure you have something fun you can frame, and Framebridge can do it for you. It's easy and it's affordable to frame just about anything. You get fair and transparent upfront pricing based on the size of your item. There's a great selection of frames. And as we've said in the past, fast service, free shipping, great for gifts. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Liz, not many things in life give you a happiness guarantee, but Framebridge does. If you're not 100% happy with your piece, they will make it right. So if this
but
sounds like...
But you're going to be happy, okay? And that's just the Satellite Sisters promise. You're going to be out. You're going to be happy you did it.
See why Framebridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit framebridge.com or see a local Framebridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything, like a Bruce Springsteen set list. That's framebridge.com. Thanks, Framebridge.
Because it's crazy expensive. If you haven't had a kid apply to college or in college lately, like, you know, it's gone up something like 825% over the last 25 years, the cost of colleges. The average private college now you can expect to pay between $55,000 and $65,000 a year for the college. The state schools, you know, you go to a UC school here, that's $32,000 a year for room, board, and tuition at a UC school. I know other schools may be a little bit less in various states, but if you're out of state, you can also, you know, plan on paying that at a big state university. It's just so crazy expensive. You can't even, all of a sudden, it felt like it went from $30,000 a year to $50,000, and now it's $65,000 a year at some of these private colleges
in
the United States.
Luxury, it's like buying a luxury car every single year.
Yeah, in cash. It's like buying a luxury car in cash. And the other thing I've noticed about 17, 18-year-olds, they have no concept of debt.
Yeah,
they do not understand. So I have seen a couple of friends really be tortured in their college decision when they had to say no to the super expensive college and say yes to the college where their child got more merit aid, because their child is thinking, well, I'm going to get out and I'm going to get a great job. And so what if I take out $80,000, $90,000 worth of loans? I'm going to be making $100,000 a year. They all think they're going to make $100,000 a year, and that somehow when they make that, then they'll have like $50,000 extra cash to pay off their loans. There is no correlation between the understanding at 17, 18 of the $10,000, $20,000 a year you might be taking out in loans to attend a private college and how that gets paid off over 40, 50 years. You know, it's, you don't have a lot of cash hanging around you're in your 20s. You know,
so. And I will give Lee Siegel, the author, some credit. I mean, you know, he wants to be a writer. He wants to go into a field that is not, you know, where you're not going to see, you know, most writers are not earning high incomes. And so, you know, we will always need writers. We will always need artists. We will always need people that want to go into fields that are
social work, working at nonprofits, certain teaching jobs. Right.
We need people to do that. And that, you know, it is so unfair to them as they choose these careers, then to burden them or to lay on, you know, these giant debts. And that's a real issue. And I think it is really, you know, it's so Lee did us a good job there to raise the topic and to raise it in an important, you know, newspaper. But I don't think he should have defaulted on the loan.
And he's giving out a lot of really bad financial advice. Like I looked at companion columns at Slate and Vox where they have economists actually go, this is sort of criminal behavior that he's advocating.
Don't do this.
Please do not do that. Right. Like they will garnish your wages. They're going to get their money back, the federal government. Maybe they can't garnish your wages because you're a freelancer, Lee, but for people with the paycheck, they garnish your wages or your Social Security. They're going to get their student loan money back.
Or you don't even get the job because they check your credit rating as part of job applications now. And therefore, you know, so, you know, that's not a good plan. So,
you know, sometimes college admissions people, you know, will say, go ahead and apply to schools, even if you can't afford it or it seems out of reach. You don't know what your financial aid package is going to be. But from what I've seen, it is so hard when the children get into the schools they want for the parents to shut it down, to say, sorry, that is something you absolutely have to set up before. As I said, I have seen a lot of people struggle with that. And I'm sure it's really hard. You feel they want to go to this school and they've gotten in and they have all the glossy brochures and they have no concept of money. So I don't necessarily think that's a great way to approach college admission. Like, go ahead, put in an application. You never know. Well, you kind of know. You kind of know if you can afford that school or not. Right. You have some, you know, with the new net price calculators on the admission sites, you have some idea of what you're going to be paying. But it's just, it is a burden because it's crazy expensive. I hope, frankly, I hope the system explodes next year because.
Because would that, as your son is applying to college?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. It is not the same. It is not the same world that we went to school in, as a baby boomer or a Gen Xer. I mean, it's much more difficult for the millennials as they're graduating.
Yeah. So. And then you see things like, you know, Harvard got a $400 million donation last week. Well, then why is there any tuition at all at Harvard? Like, I mean, seriously, you see the endowments of some of these colleges. I know a lot of schools are saying, oh, if your parents make under $125,000, you don't have to pay, but there's just a big gap. You know, it's still a lot of money for what they theoretically think you could pay. Some of these schools could just underwrite the undergraduate tuition. They could.
They could.
They have billions of dollars.
But because the system that, you know, that kids that, you know, that young kids should be paying for all of this, it's just not working.
They just don't
really.
It's not working. It's not working.
Now, with that all said, Leanne, I know you want your younger son to go to Stanford. And I now know I've got the word, Leanne, on what from the former dean of the freshmen at Stanford, or first years, as I'm sure it's called.
Yes, first years. Now,
first years, about what teenagers should be doing in the summer. And you know what the big answer is, Leanne?
What?
Nothing. That's what teenagers should be doing.
Really?
Yes. This is
on sites, because that's pretty much what he's doing.
Okay. This
What's
is
happening?
Julie Lithcott-Haim, and she is the former first-year dean at Stanford. And she said that you must let your children feel summer. That's what needs to go on, that you need to loosen the reins, Leanne, that we have to get away from what she refers to as a checklisted childhood. Because you can imagine that the students that she sees at Stanford have probably worked through a lot of checklists that, you know, what we really need to be doing with our children is they need to be unfettered by adult fears. Now, I know you have fears for your son, Leanne, right?
Yes. Every parent does. That he's never going to leave his room.
Right.
That his whole life will be spent watching The Simpsons.
Well, see, he's doing the right thing, Leanne, because according to Julie, not this Julie, not satellite sister Julie, but the other Julie, that he's developing his sense of self. He is like, he has the time to run around with his friends. He should be allowed to just play, to make up games, and that this doing nothing is actually doing something, Leanne, and that he's working at doing nothing.
Like a good college essay topic to me. He could work on that.
This is what I'm telling you, Leanne, that if you follow that strategy to let him do nothing, I want you to know that as your sister and as a former dean of admissions, that the kid better come up with some brilliant essays, stellar grades, and over-the-top recommendations. And so he can go ahead and feel summer, but he better have that other stuff too, okay?
I'm feeling summer. It's day two. I'm feeling it. That's
okay,
for sure.
Well, you can buy her book, Leanne. She's written a book. It's How to Raise an Adult. Break free of the over-parenting trap and prepare your kid for success. Okay?
You know, it does literally take every ounce of restraint you have as a parent not to nag them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week when they're high school juniors.
I'm sure it's much worse even than when my my kids were in high school.
Sometimes I just have to walk out of the room because I have to pace myself on the nagging, on the checklist of childhood. I just have to walk out of the room or I'm going to say something else that he, quote, needs to do that day. And I ran into a whole bunch of moms of juniors, parents that we all have kids at different high schools, but the kids went to elementary school together this weekend. And that's it. You know, it's like, what are you doing? What are they doing for the summer? Did they take the SAT last week, the ACT? With private college counselor, is that worth it? This, I mean, it's just, it is hard not to nag them every single day. So I may get that book just as some backup because.
Okay. All right. I mean,
it's exhausting.
It is exhausting. I think she's right, but she's in a very unusual position.
She can get her kid into Stanford.
Right. Probably. They had some employee thing. They got an employee discount. I mean, as a disclaimer, I worked at Stanford for a very brief time at a very low level. Okay. So I don't want to oversell myself. And I was a very, very limited role at that fine institution. But she's selling a book because she is the former dean at Stanford.
Okay.
And so that, right? I mean, that's why you're buying the bowl. I want to get the secret of, you know, like what do I really have to do?
There is something to be said for it, though. Letting them have a regular summer that's not filled with prep classes and do this and academic classes and, you know, maybe a little job and, you know, hanging out with their friends. There is definitely something to be said for that. It's not the worst thing in the world.
I think that's true. I'm sure that she has witnessed in her 10 years working with first year students, the consequences, the negative consequences of having an overly programmed childhood, of having, you know, been, checklist all the way through, you know, for kids who achieved at a high level in high school, and then get to college and maybe don't have the strongest sense of themselves, you know, right. Or don't have any idea of who the Simpsons are.
Right.
That would be the other thing.
That would be a tragedy.
Epic. That would be an epic fail. I think that's what they say in Silicon Valley.
We had a situation this weekend here. A young girl, a high school, 16-year-old, went to take her parents dropped her off to take the SAT and she disappeared. She texted her brother and she just said, I can't take the pressure from school. It's weighing me down. And she never went in to take the SAT and when her parents went to pick her up. So that's been posted all over people's Facebook pages. They are still looking for her here in California. So this idea of backing off every once in a while, that's an extreme case, but it's very real. It's not the worst thing. Yeah. So, okay. Well, I'll start next week backing off.
You got a few things on the list.
He's got to take the ACTs on Saturday. Okay. And then we're meeting with his high school college counselor on Thursday.
Okay, well, maybe you should within a month, do you give him a little more free reign? Good, Liam.
All right. Well, one of the things I mentioned last week that got a huge response on the Facebook page was community service. Now, we were in a desperate situation. My son needed some more hours the weekend before. And I said, it's totally his fault. You know, it's a Catholic school. They require mandatory community service hours, 10 hours freshman year, 20 sophomore year, 30 as a junior, and 40 as a senior. You know all about it. We signed on the dotted line. That doesn't make it any easier to execute or more pleasant. He got them all in. We had to go to a bunch of food banks together last weekend. Hopefully there'll be a lasting experience for him. Maybe not. He got them all in, got everything checked off on his list. But Julie, they did come into his English exam the first day and remove a couple of kids from the room. Did not get
because they had not finished their community service.
Yeah.
And so
that was the threat. And I thought they were just bluffing. I can't. I was like, are you kidding
me? Wow. That's really bringing down the hammer. Okay. I guess they're serious about the community service. Okay.
So, but even before we got here, I've always been sort of suspicious of mandatory community service. I always thought it wasn't really something, I thought it was something that should be either, you know, should be encouraged by the parents. A lot of kids do it through scouting. A lot of kids do it through churches. It just seemed sometimes to be something that schools slap on top of their regular curriculum as kind of it looks good and it feels good. But in essence, actually carrying out most often becomes the burden of the parents. There's some kids that are super enthusiastic. They get involved. They check off those hours. It's no problem. But in other times, there are a lot of weird restrictions for community service. A lot of organizations, you can't be under 18 or under 16, or you need special training, or you need a TB shot. I mean, honestly, it can be kind of complicated. You can't just show up and start doing good stuff. So for me, I always have wrestled with it, you know, thinking that it is really something that should be run out of the home. And once you start putting mandatory on it, like, it kind of loses the idea of, you know, what community service is supposed to bring to you. It's supposed to be something you enjoy, something you like, and that you get something out of. So this is just one mom's opinion. And so I put that out there in just complete frustration last week after our near miss. So, and I was surprised. We got a ton of responses. I'm not alone in feeling the frustration with how the community service has become mandatory and run out of the schools as some sort of, you know, some people called
it's like a course.
Yeah, resume like building. Other people thought that, again, it should be something that is done in the home or the church. There just seemed to be, even though a great idea, community service, a lot of restrictions that can make the execution, you know, very exhausting for families to actually do it. So I believe in community service. I just, the mandatory part and the punitive part, I don't believe in. And I was surprised, Julie, we had a couple of parents say that their kids could not walk in graduation. One at the middle school level and one at the high school level, because their kids hadn't executed their community service. And in both cases, these kids had really suffered from anxiety and depression during the year. So they were dealing with a lot of stuff on the home front. They were probably, mm-hmm. as parents, just happy to get their kids to school and get them through the required courses. So, you know, when you think about that, not letting a 12-year-old, 13-year-old walk in middle school graduation, that seems kind of harsh. Like, is that the point? You know, other people said their kids got a tremendous amount from it. They were able to execute it. They had schools that did have requirements. Again, public, private, parochial. It seems to be across the board. There are a lot of community service requirements, but they said that the schools run the program. It's not on the parents' back. It's like group service projects with the whole school. That's kind of interesting.
I know a number of the people that work with organizations wrote to our Facebook page and said that they count on volunteers.
Yeah.
They need people to come and help, because that's sort of integral to their whole organization. So it's not like you're still in favor of volunteering.
Yeah, I'm still in favor of volunteering. I think it's the aspect of run through the schools and mandatory. Yeah. Like, is that on top of everything else what the school's job is to, you know, mandate a well-rounded kid?
Right.
You know, when very often they also have to do competing community service, scouting, churches, as I mentioned. Mm-hmm. Steven wrote in, he said he runs a church program selling African crosses to churches and other institutions. And then the proceeds go back to Africa. And he said, we're continually in need of volunteers for quality control, but we can only get kids from parochial schools because the public schools won't let their kids use anything religious, any service hours for a religious organization for their credit.
So it's complicated, right?
Yeah, very complicated. Like, again, idea is good, concept good, exposing kids, hoping something takes, all good. It's just the execution can then become a burden. Kathleen also runs an organization through her church, and so they do a 12-week food drive with concentrated with NGOs, and they serve the homeless people, mainly seniors. And she said their church doesn't allow children to do it because they want to respect the dignity of the people that they're serving. Seniors are sometimes uncomfortable, and they, you know, they did one time they were they're not allowed to post photos or sort of, you know, make a big show of their community service. So a lot of different opinions on this, a lot of different opinions. Sue, I liked what she said. She said, I think if we spend more time on emotional learning and values and civic responsibility, we might find young people interested in the world around them. Volunteering with no context really doesn't make sense. It's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Although they do actually spend time on that kind of stuff in certain schools.
It's just that the kids aren't paying attention to that.
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine that most schools are trying to provide that
context. Christine said that they have a volunteer requirement and their high school as a whole did something like 10,000 hours of community service, which is amazing. It's a lot. All together, that's what they did. They said, we're lucky because it doesn't have to be inconvenient or only during the school year, which is a requirement at my son's school. And it helps them find something they love and continue to do into adulthood. Yeah, that's the hope, is that they really connect with some group, be it a church group or be it animals or seniors or an arts group or a music group. I think that's the hope. Let me see. There was one really funny one. Said, oh, Carrie said she had no problem helping her son, and we've done several community service projects as a family before he was in high school. I'm just waiting for him to get off the pot and express an interest in anything. No.
Well put, Carrie.
Carrie, I think many of us feel your pain. Hey, it's really hard. I mean, when you get up into the hours, like 30, 40 hours of service a year, you got to care about what you're doing. That's not a couple of one-off Saturdays. You actually have to care. So, and then we had a couple of responses from college professors, some who mandated community service in their class and others who encouraged it. And they said, what happens is by the time kids graduate from high school, they expect credit for community service. Like they won't just do it because they want some kind of credit for it. I thought that was interesting too. So there you go. More on community service. Thank you for all your responses. A lot of people joined the Facebook group this week, so we're happy to have you. You can ask to join. We have a Facebook page, which is just the Satellite Sisters, just like it. And there you go. And then we have a Facebook group that's interactive, and we'd love to have you. Just ask to join, and you'll be approved, usually. So
it's like getting into college, Leah. It's about the same, right?
It's much easier. It's much easier.
Well, Leah, you know, it is Tuesday, as we've said from the top of the show, and that is now we're on Tuesday Trends. And I have two fashion trends that I'm bringing to you, which is unusual, right, Leanne? Because this is not really, usually Sheila does this, but there was one that caught my eye, and maybe you've seen this. It's been in magazines and it's in the newspaper, is an art director in New York just came to a decision after one day of, like, you know, she was scurrying to get to work, and, you know, she had to take the subway, and she was in a rush, and she was all stressed, and she showed, and she thought she had to look good because she was going to be doing a company presentation. And she shows up and she realizes she has her sweater on inside out. Now, hasn't that happened to all of us? I mean, I know I have showed up to places with tags still on items and, you know, just not completely pulled together. Well, that was the turning point for this young art director. And what she decided to do was that she wanted to adopt a uniform to wear to work. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you know, uniforms are common in certain industries, but she worked in advertising as an art director, and that was not a field where you typically wear a uniform. But what she did is she went out and bought 15 identical white silk shirts with a diagonal button line from Zara. So they weren't very expensive shirts, but she bought 15 of the same shirt. And then she bought multiple pairs of black pants, and she just wore that outfit every single day to work.
I like it.
Do you like it, Leanne?
Yeah.
I mean, you
did
know,
she add any accessories? Did she?
She did occasionally.
Occasionally.
She would. She would add a little, like, bolero tie to the top of the shirt.
That sounds terrible. Yeah.
No. It's like a black cord, a little black cord. A bow tie. No, totally. She's an art director.
Yeah.
So she had, It was art directed, her outfit, you know, but she just decided that she was going to wear a uniform and it streamlined her life. You know,
I bet it did.
Then she didn't have to worry about what she was going to wear for a big presentation. She always, you know, looked good, not, you know, but she didn't have to, you know, she didn't have to go out and buy things at the last minute. She didn't have to spend money on stuff that, you know, turned out to be a mistake or didn't fit well, or, you know, how you do that when you're like, oh,
yeah.
So, and she had a little more disposable income at the end of the year because she wasn't spending as much on clothing.
Now, did anyone notice? Were there any drawbacks to wearing the uniform?
She didn't know. There was no particular drawbacks. In fact, people did notice, and she had an article written in a fashion magazine about what she did. So it seems to be positive for her. You know?
Yeah.
And now the story's been picked up by
Jewel.
Liz, summer is coming up, and you know what that means? It means you're grilling. You're grilling and chilling there with your butcher box. What do you got going on the grill this summer?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Because I'm going to be up in Bend for a part of the summer, yeah. I'm having my box sent there, Leanne.
That's great.
Go on vacation with your butcher box is what I'm recommending. Yeah, either way, you're just going to buy meat and fish and stuff when you get there. Why do that? Anyway, I love their steaks. I love their scallops. The scallops are really good. And the chicken thighs, all good. I'm ready.
That's right. ButcherBox gives you peace of mind and easy to find high quality meat and seafood you can trust. It's 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork that's raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. No antibiotics or added hormones. And as Liz said, delivered right to your doorstep. And you can customize that delivery plan, Liz, right? Because it can go wherever you want it to go, whenever you want it to go. If you want to delay it a week, you know, speed it up a week, you just go to your ButcherBox account and you can make that all happen.
It's so easy to manage online.
Yeah. And if you're like Liz, you can take your ButcherBox on vacation, which is... That's nice to have something familiar there.
Yes.
So if you want to take your meat on vacation, sign up at butcherbox.com/sisters and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. So you can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/sisters and use code SISTERS to choose your free-for-a-year offer, plus get $20 off your first order. Thanks, ButcherBox. Hey, it's Liz and Leanne here, and we want to thank PROS for supporting this episode of Satellite Sisters. Now, you know, Liz, I've been out and about with my new book, The Marriage Sabbatical. The book is getting rave reviews. I'm very happy. But you know what else is getting rave reviews? My hair, Liz, my hair from PROS is getting rave reviews.
Leanne, I am not surprised. You have been on that PROS hair regimen for quite a while. I mean, you have good hair anyway, but now you have great hair because you've really paid attention to it.
Well, Liz, PROS is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. And you know what? I love the regimen they have me on. Do I take the hair vitamins every day? Yes, I do. Do I use my shampoo and conditioner made especially for Leanne Dolan? Yes, I do. I sometimes use the leave-in conditioner when my hair's really dry? I do. And I even have a pre-scalp thing that they give me. Okay, PROS, you're the boss. I'll take it. You tell me what my hair needs. That sounds good. And here's the thing. It's personalization, Liz. For millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely Leanne's. Okay? And I'm using it. PROS isn't just better for you. It's also better for the planet, Liz. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. So PROS, we love you. I love the photos of my hair. Couldn't be happier.
Photos of your hair. There are people in the photos, too. That's the thing about a book tour. Everybody has their picture taken with Leanne and then post it. So the hair is important.
Couldn't be happier, PROS. PROS is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin. They're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/sisters. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/sisters. And PROS is spelled PROSE. pros.com/sisters. Thanks, PROS.
Julie. Hello. Jewel? Hello? Oh my gosh, Pluto's moon's there. Just a fundamentally unstable situation. And apparently, according to a text I got from Julie, power outage at her house. And 2 to 4 hours, we're not going to be able to get the rest of the show in today. So I'm just going to take over. This is Leanne. I'm still here in Pasadena. This is what happens occasionally, but we will carry on, right? We won't be flummoxed. We won't be wobbly and unstable and eccentric like Pluto's moons are. We are going to carry on. I feel like I promised you some good information. So Julie had another fashion tip. I'm sorry we didn't get to because it revolves around the Land's End catalog, but we'll have to save that for next week. So I'm just going to move right ahead. Just going to pick up where we would have moved on to. I had some movie and TV recommendations for Julie because I feel so bad about the horrific nature of last week's Outlander finale. And I know she was very appreciative of all the support she got and also the encouragement she got to hang in there, that Dragonfly and Amber, the next book, is very different. There won't be anything as brutal in that. You know, it goes back to sort of the magic of time travel and what we all know and love about the relationship of Claire and Jamie. So she is weighing that possibility. I don't want to pressure her, but in the meantime, I thought she might need a palate cleanser. So I actually went to the movies twice this week. So what happens when your husband goes out of town? First of all, you get to watch the Tony Awards without any grief. That was fantastic. I enjoyed the show so much, but particularly because none of the men in my house were home and I could just watch it and just enjoy Alan Cumming and his short pants. I was fine with that. I love the Tonys, but I also got to the theater to see two actual feature films, and they both have kind of a classical literature base. So I thought they would be perfect for Julie. The first one I recommend without hesitation, and that is a new adaptation of Far from the Madding Crowd. That is Thomas Hardy's novel. It's like a classic, I want to say a romantic love triangle, but it's actually a romantic quadrangle. Carey Mulligan plays Bathsheba, as they say. Bathsheba Everdeen is the main character, and she is fantastic in this role as sort of a proud and independent farming girl in England in the 1870s. And she is courted and wooed by three different men, the soldier, the well-to-do farmer next door, and ladies, the shepherd. And all I have to say, Julie and others, is you may want to take a gander at the shepherd, because it's a little bit like the Highlanders. I'm just saying. You may change your allegiance from the Highlanders to shepherds around the world. Once you see the shepherd in Far from the Madding Crowd, it is like unadulterated romance. It's fantastic. Beautifully acted, beautifully shot. It's 2 hours. Maybe it feels a little slow in the middle, but it's deliberate is what I would say the pace is. And the payoff at the end is totally worthwhile. So I think if you enjoy your Downton Abbeys, if you'd enjoyed your movie version of Pride and Prejudice, you will enjoy the new version of Far from the Madding Crowd. Fantastic. Can't recommend it enough. Now, this other one also has its roots in classical literature, Gemma Bovary. Okay, so it is, of course, based on Madame Bovary. And this is set, it's sort of a Franco-English film. It's like half in French, half in English. There's subtitles. People go back and forth. It's set in France, but it stars a British couple that relocates to France. And her name is Gemma Bovary. So it's a modern day retelling of the Emma Bovary story. And I will say this, it is unexpectedly sort of dark in places, unexpectedly humorous in places, and is also adult in places. So this is not one to take your high school senior. It's definitely a French film, and it's a bit naughty in places and a bit adult, but I think it is just edgy enough, and I really, really enjoyed the performances in this movie. And just some beautiful scenery, beautifully shot in Normandy, and just kind of an unexpected ending. So I would also recommend that with an asterisk, because it does have naughty scenes and naughty language. as Julie would say. So for Julie, I just wanted to make sure she wasn't traumatized. It's a trigger warning for her after the Outlander season finale. And then finally, one other thing I wanted to mention is a new scripted TV show on Bravo that I really enjoyed called Odd Mom Out. So a couple weeks ago, we talked about the alleged anthropologist on the Upper East Side that had published a piece about wife bonuses, right? Her name is Wednesday Martin. Well, I guess apparently she's lied about many things, including her name, which is actually Wendy Martin. But I thought, oh, Wednesday, that's a good name for an anthropologist. And apparently she's not really an anthropologist, as she described herself in the article. She, I guess, just shops at Anthropology. I don't know. She's an actual anthropologist. And she made a lot of wild statements about women on the Upper East Side. And she has a book coming out and blah, blah. And Julie and I disbelieved pretty much everything she said. And the book coming out, which is allegedly memoir, nonfiction, has a lot of other, you know, things that don't quite add up. So let's just forget about Wednesday Martin and those mothers, but try Odd Man Out on Bravo, because it's a very funny scripted comedy about mothers on the Upper East Side. But it, again, it's fiction. It's played for comedy. It's got a great cast, really well acted, kind of an interesting story of how it came to be. The two executive producers, the showrunners, are both veteran Sex and the City writers. The woman starring in it is also a novelist and has made her career as a New York Times, Jill Kargman, as a New York Times bestselling novelist. And now she's starring in this TV show that she helped to create. So it's a fantastic story of sort of satellite sisterhood in action. The two showrunners were childhood best friends, which I love. And now they're writing partners together. And the first two episodes were on Bravo, and they'll repeat throughout the week. Super funny. I thought it was really well done, really well acted, very clever, not super mean-spirited, just very smart writing, and I really, really enjoyed it. So congratulations, Odd Mom Out. Fantastic job. So there you go, Julie. I'm just trying to make it up, you know, make up the Outlander finale to you. So check out Far From the Madding Crowd, Gemma Bovary, which is going to be in your art house films, and then on Bravo, Odd Mom Out. Okay, I think we're going to save the Go Red for Women stuff and a few things till next week when Julie comes back. I'll throw this out here. All right. I did not know this was a thing. Well, Sheila has a segment, right? Like, is this a trend or did I miss it or something like that? When, you know, what did I miss or how did I miss this? I can't recall. She comes up with a new segment every week. So I don't know what it is. But three times in the last week, I've come across articles in Real Simple. I turned on an infomercial on television and then another thing online about something that apparently has been happening for a while, but I was unaware of it. And it's the no shampoo movement. Are you familiar with this? Apparently, it's referred to by beauty bloggers as no poo, which is just disgusting. So I'm not going to call it that. But I first read of it in Real Simple magazine, where one of the beauty editors confessed that she had not shampooed her hair in 10 years. And she just uses conditioner in her hair to like rub her scalp and then wash it out. And then she puts in another round of conditioner and she washes it out and she doesn't use shampoo. And it made me think, well, is something wrong with shampoo? Did I miss that memo? I mean, I understand. I try not to shampoo my hair every day. I understand it's probably not great for you to shampoo every day, but is it dangerous? So then I did more investigating. And apparently this is a movement that's been around since like 2008, 2009. Some people use conditioner. Other people use baking soda and water as a shampoo-like substance. And they rub that into their scalp, they rinse it, and they put shampoo on. And then I turned on the TV the other morning, and it was on an infomercial channel. And there was that Wen guy, those Wen hair products. And they were selling a no shampoo conditioner set. Here's the deal, Satellite Sisterhood. If you have tried this no shampoo thing, what's the story? Does it work? What's the point? What did I miss? How did I miss this? Is this like adult coloring books? Is it worth it? I'm kind of intrigued by it. I don't know why, but because I like shampoo, I've got nothing. But it just seemed like three articles in one week. Maybe I should pay attention to it. Maybe we can get the lab rats to test this out, or maybe Julie and I can test it out for the Tuesday show. So let us know if you have tried the no shampooing movement, any of these options, baking soda, conditioner, rinsing your hair, then just let us know on the Facebook group. All right. We're the Satellite Sisters. That wraps it up for today. Sorry, Julie had to drop off, but that, you know, that's one of the charms of self-producing your own show. It's charming, isn't it? It's charming. We'd like to thank you always for your support of Satellite Sisters, for spreading around the links, for the great messages on Facebook, particularly this week. So many messages in support of Liz. I know she's really appreciated that. And we enjoy interacting with you. I hope you enjoy interacting with us. We are the Satellite Sisters. Don't forget, call your Satellite Sister.